Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Simcast here on RS1. I am introducing this, which is weird. This is probably only the third time I've ever done this, so it's still kind of strange. But this is episode 37. It is September 15th, a very good day, if I do say so myself. And it's the UK show, so I am joined by a slightly hoarse, and I don't mean he's got four legs, he's going to be running at Goodwood anytime soon, Mr. Matthew Hunter. Hello, Matt.
I'm not running anywhere.
I didn't want to say that, but...
Well, not even...
You've opened the can of worms, or the Findus lasagna in this case.
Oh, so, not even for a bus.
I only run for food. There are other buses. There's never more food. That's around the problem.
Around here, there aren't even buses anymore.
Good Lord. It's been a bit of a week, hasn't it?
It has.
Yes, being the UK show and all. Of course, we can't really go any further without addressing it. Obviously, everybody here at the Simcast gives all of our thoughts to the royal family in the wake of the sad passing of Her Majesty the Queen. Obviously, that was announced right before last week's show. So that was a little odd, but it's a bit strange here in the UK. But nevertheless, we shall carry on and all of that stuff. How's your week been?
It's been a week.
It has, hasn't it?
It has. There's not a lot of other news in the UK at the moment, which is understandable.
I would quite like to not keep living through historical moments.
I said to Steph earlier on, do you know what? It's been one thing after another since pretty much the start of 2020. Mm. I'm over it.
Yeah, I want to go back to being boring and mundane.
Yeah, I'm with all due respect to current events and stuff, I am very much ready for a period of nothing happening.
Yeah, definitely.
That would be lovely. So yes, it's been. I mean, and obviously, you know, although with everything that was happening, lots of things didn't happen over the weekend, but the Italian Grand Prix did. In fact, I think outside of the UK, a lot of motorsports still.
Well, happened. even in the UK, all of the racetracks still ran their races. Based off of, I think, the Royal Family.
Yes, out British, declaration. Yes, because British GP, British GT still happened at Brands, and Richard Neary sadly didn't win one minute with 3 minutes left on the clock, which was very, very gutting and sad.
Yeah, I think it was only really the Premier League football that actually stopped, wasn't it? Which looked a bit strange in hindsight, considering everything else went ahead.
And to be honest, I mean, you know, we make no bones about it. You know, I've suffered with mental health stuff in the past and still do to some lesser degree. And actually, you know, with everything that's going on, having the escapism of Premiership Rugby in my case was actually extremely positive. And I think for a lot of people that would have been the same.
100% agree.
You know, there's nothing, you know, there's millions, there's a plethora of different ways to deal with these sort of things. And for me, that was mine. You know, it was an excellent moment of respect and reflection before the start of the match. And then we had a fantastic, very positive, very hard-fought game of rugby.
Yeah.
Which Exeter thankfully won.
Well, that always makes it better.
I'll tell you what's actually better than that. Well, for a start, obviously we're live at the minute on the Wednesday night while we're recording this. England, the Red Roses, are playing Wales as we speak. Now, obviously, you and I both support Wales.
Yeah, I have a vested interest here, even though I had no idea this was happening, but go on.
It's not great news if you're a Wales fan. but only because trying to find it at the same time. And only because if you think that England, the English rugby team, women's English rugby team, have been professional for I think about 5, maybe 6 years. And the women's Welsh rugby team literally went professional this year. It makes a humongous difference.
Mm. So how much are we losing by?
33-7.
Okay. Yeah.
We have points on the board.
Well, I mean, in that context, again, I didn't know that. I like rugby, but not like you. in that context, yeah, that's acceptable, I suppose.
I mean, the thing is, England are, they're probably, I don't even know who can sort of rival them at the minute. They're probably about 3 seasons ahead of everybody else. That's why they're what, number one in the world, really.
Yeah.
You know, they are a phenomenon at the minute. They are, and to be honest, you think all the plaudits and everything that the women's football team got, with was it Euro 2022? Was it 2022 or 2021? I forget.
21, even though it was held in 22.
Yeah. So the football competition, what they won, which is excellent and amazing and very, very positive for women's football. Absolutely. I had to put my hand up and say, "But excuse me, but the women's rugby team have been doing this for years." But it just sort of, it's a bit annoying how it sort of goes under the radar a little bit. But they're playing it. So the Red Roses are playing at Ashton Gate, which is in Bristol at the moment. And there's at least a minimum of 10,000 people there watching him, which has got to be one of the largest crowds to watch the Red Roses on home soil, which is fantastic. And we are probably about a month, 2 months away from them going to the World Cup in New Zealand, and hopefully bringing it back with them. Which would be quite cool. How did we get talking about this? You asked me how my week was, did you?
That was it, yeah.
Sorry. Well, we know how your week's going to be because it's your birthday tomorrow. Tomorrow?
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Well, today when it goes out.
Yes, today per air time. So
hence why you've already given me the birthday present of presenting the show.
Yes, so happy birthday for today, tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
You're still too young.
I'm 26.
Still too young.
I'm 4 years away from being in the 30s, and I'm like, as soon as that happens, I'm just going to, like, that's it, that's the end.
Shut up.
Meanwhile, you're like 78.
Oh, God, I feel like it today. If you want to wish Jordan a happy birthday or throw abuse at him or me, because you could contact us on Twitter at Simcast Radio using the hashtag SimcastRSL. And as Ben always likes to say, we are all members of the Midweek Motorsport, or the RSL Listeners Collective, Radio Show Limited, Listeners Collective on Facebook. And you can send us stuff there too, if it's more than the characters that fit on a tweet.
Indeed.
So more abuse.
Longer abuse. Yes.
And actually, if you want to aim it all at Lewis, because he's not here at the minute and therefore won't reach it.
Well, he's on a cruise, so I think he needs...
I hope it's not a Disney... Is it a Disney cruise?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it's that fun. I don't like cruises.
It's a small boat after all.
It's not the Titanic. Anyway... No, yeah, I think because he's on a cruise, I think need to balance out the good vibes he's having with some abuse. So yeah, do feel free at @LS_racing, I think is his Twitter.
Well remembered.
If you want to completely go overboard to see what he did there.
Oh, he's just going to check it at one point and go, but I haven't been here. Oh dear. Anyway, talking about old things, or things that aren't going to be, that aren't here.
It wasn't a bad segue until you butchered the rendition of it.
The segue lost a wheel halfway through and careened off into a tree.
You're now just a mono way.
Mm.
But yes, old things.
Yeah. So, and do you know what? Sorry, cough button. I don't know why I felt the need to announce it after I'd done it. I may as well just cough on air, hadn't I?
Yeah, you might. Yeah, at that point, you might as well have just given us the glorious ASMR of it, but go on.
So, one thing I love about sim racing, I think you do too, Jordan, is the fact that it acts as a fantastic interactive time capsule. You know, you think of all the fantastic old cars that we're able to drive around, particularly on like AMS2, R Factor, and Assetto Corsa, that are lovingly created and available for you to drive in game, even though they probably haven't seen a racetrack for, you know, however long. And one of the other really cool things about this, of course, is because of laser scan technology, the tracks as well are incredibly accurate. Therefore, if something were to say unhappy happened to a circuit, it is forever immortalized in the wonders of sim racing. A interactive museum, if you will, and iRacing is doing just that. I always fall over on this circuit's name. It's also not Australia, it's in New Zealand.
You are on about Pukekohe.
Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Okay.
What were you going to say, just out of interest?
Pukekohe.
I mean, that's not the worst pronunciation in the world, but that, yeah, I'm basing mine off of the one time I watched a V8 supercar race here, so hopefully it's correct.
One of us is right.
But, yeah, answers on a postcard.
It's probably not. No, if it was anything like the Irish, it's probably pronounced Sharon.
No, yeah, you're probably right. But no, yeah, this is really good news. I honestly, I'm not like as much as whenever I've seen V8 supercar racing, I've loved it just due to the times I don't watch it. But I had no idea that Pukekohe was closing. I used Sandown was. I knew that much, or it was under threat at least. But I hadn't actually heard that this place was closing.
No, I saw an article. I can't remember who posted it. It might have been Crailsy. I saw an article that said, or how I read it was that portions of like the outfield, you know, the perimeter area were going to be built on. But it didn't read as if it meant the circuit. And then I read something else that basically said, yeah, the circuit's stopping. And I was like, oh, that's sad. And it is sad because it would have been one of the old race drivers, I think. It's probably the first time I've ever driven on that.
It was on Toka Race Driver 3, I know that much.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember really enjoying it. I found it quite a challenge. I find most of the Australian circuits a challenge, to be honest.
Oh, they're great, they're great.
Australian and New Zealand circuits. Yeah. But I think it's brilliant. I think it's fantastic that iRacing are doing that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as you say, that's the preservation side of motorsport history is for me rapidly becoming one of the major selling points of sim racing. And in the sad event, as we say, of Pukekohe closing, to have it preserved within iRacing is a fantastic way to, you know, keep it alive and keep it, you know, so that people remember it and they're able to do laps. And it's the same similar situation as to Sandown, because that's it's not confirmed to be closing, but there are potential redevelopment plans in the works around there. Ironically, another track that surrounds a race course. And yeah, like the more tracks we can get preserved in that way is great. And we've seen in the case of North Wilkesboro on the American side of things, when they brought the version of that to iRacing and, you know, had it scanned as if it were in the 1980s, that was a really cool glimpse into the past. And now, obviously, the interest that's been drawn around bringing racing back to North Wilkesboro has then led to racing coming back to North Wilkesboro. Now they're hosting the NASCAR All-Star Race next year. Bit soon. Just having the glimpse, like I've always liked racing historical content, be it cars, be it tracks. You know, iRacing has got the Lotus 49 and the 79, and they are perhaps some of the most fun cars that are on the service, especially now the 79's recently had its graphical overhaul. And you know, with that comes, you know, old Monza old Spa, albeit not on iRacing. You know, having the opportunity to drive these combinations that we would never see nowadays, be it due to safety or the fact that they just don't exist anymore. Yeah, I think that's an aspect of sim racing that isn't spoken about as much as it should, because having that window into the past is really fascinating.
Well, I mean, it's one of the plus points, I think, of Project Cars 2 was they had, I think, I want to say Rouen.
Yeah, they did.
Rouen-les-Essarts. You know, and I'm sure someone's done Reims, which I think would just be immense.
I think it's not on any current sim, but I know they had it for GP Legends.
Oh, someone have converted it then.
It's incredible what some of the modding community is able to do.
But you know, you've got like the older versions of Le Mans available, which are fantastic. So the 60s version. I mean, this is why Assetto Corsa is so good, because again, you said about the modding community and R Factor 2, in fairness, and the quality of some of the circuits that these people have never ever. There's no way they've ever been to them because they don't exist. And what? they would have taken pictures, footage, and all this that and the other, and pieced together how the circuit would look. And then built it, and then you can drive it. It's incredible.
Yeah, and as you mentioned old Le Mans, you know, I've made no bones about it in the past that I've only recently gotten into endurance racing, and I didn't really, even then it's more IMSA than World Endurance to me. I hadn't really paid much attention to the history of Le Mans until very recently, and when they brought out the old version of Le Mans on Project Cars 2, you know, I'd driven Le Mans without the chicanes on the Mulsanne, but I'd never known that there was a time. I know people who are listening to the show obviously know this and are going to be rolling their eyes, but I'd never known that the Porsche curves once weren't there, and that it just was a straight run from Arnage basically back to the start finish line. And then to drive that layout, like, cause seeing footage is one thing, you know, there's amazing footage of people lapping the Nordschleife in the olden days and stuff like that, and that's incredible. But actually having the interactiveness of being able to drive those layouts, it just provides a whole new layer of respect and context for the history that you see. And given that motorsport, one of the best things about motorsport is the history and how much it's changed over time, you know, having the interactive ability to go and drive the track and the cars in the conditions they were, that's one hell of an alternative to a history textbook.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, with Silverstone and Project Cars, I'm pretty certain AMS as well have obviously the current version. They have the version from like the early 80s, early 90s, where Beckett's was actually a triangle, you know, effectively a triangle that went out behind where the current grandstand is. Here's a little thing: if you're at Silverstone, and people who have been to Silverstone, I'm sure people listening to this show will have been to Silverstone. But a lot of you might not. If you ever get the chance to go to Silverstone and you get a chance to either drive or walk around the perimeter road, when you go behind Beckett's grandstand, the perimeter road, for reasons that aren't initially clear, jinks to the left. You see a little curb on the inside, and then it goes right. And that would be the original right-hand turn that was Beckett's. It's awesome, absolutely awesome. I love little things like that are still there. Yeah. But the thing that excited me most about the older versions of Silverstone that were available was that I could still drive the old island circuit.
Yeah.
That was the old international circuit with touring cars back in the 90s. And you know, and do actual bridge.
Yeah.
Which is still one of the travesty that corner was lost.
But, yeah, you know, as much as I like... I don't hate the new Grand Prix track. I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
However, I would like to see Bridge kept to a standard where it could still be used for the Silverstone Classic or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I'd love to see that. But again, yeah, it's just not on the cards really. But you mentioned, I know we started off talking about iRacing, but I've said this many times that I have a sim for different purposes for what I want to do.
Yeah.
And AMS2 and Assetto Corsa, more so AMS2 these days because it's all officially licensed content. Not to say that the modded content's bad, but, you know, there's a certain better thing that comes with...
quality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And AMS2 knocks it out of the park when it comes to historical content. You know, the fact that they've got... for so many tracks, you mentioned Silverstone, they've got a layout dedicated to every major revamp of the track. Yeah, they might not have like one particular year where they ran a slightly different angle of approach into one corner, but major circuit redevelopment is captured. Same with Imola, same with the Red Bull Ring / the Österreichring, Spa, you know, Monza. They've got all the various layouts, and Monza's another one for an example. Like, I didn't know how many times that place was reconfigured in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then driving them now, it's like, bloody hell, it's a completely different track.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then the fact with AMS2 that you've got representations of basically every kind of Grand Prix car you could want from the late 60s to now. And then you can drive them on the versions of the tracks that they would have had at that time. I know that sim racing, you know, there's a sim racing appeal for many different things. Like, some people like the competition, some people just like having a laugh and driving around. But there is a growing interest in sim racing as a historical tool, if you will.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there is interested in more of the historical side of sim racing, then I would recommend AMS2 because it's a fantastic look into the past, and they're bringing an old version of the Nordschleife. What more could you want? Secondly, I would also recommend the content creator GP Laps, because he does, his whole channel is centered around sim racing, but older stuff. So yeah. Champ Car, Targa Florio, etc., etc. If you want to have a look into that side of sim racing and the way that the historical stuff is able to be preserved, like, yeah, I would recommend GP Laps. Give some of his stuff a watch, because it's quite fascinating to see the older stuff from somebody who only really got into real racing and sim racing within the last 12 years. It's quite an interesting way to discover all of that.
Do you know what I think this calls for?
What's that?
We need to get Chris Hay back on.
I think we do. Yeah. I also want to try and get GP Laps. We need to get him on as well, because it's a whole different angle of sim racing. So yeah.
If you're listening, get in touch. Otherwise, we'll be battering your door down soon. Well, Jordan will be.
Well, I mean, the Americans are probably literally closer, but
oh,
we'll send Ben round, or Lewis when he gets off his cruise.
And Lewis will be too tired, and Ben's far too polite.
No, there's a joke I can make there, but we need to move
Maybe
on.
Maybe not.
Yeah. But yeah, we haven't got a date for when Puka Koyi is coming. They haven't, as far as I know, they haven't scanned the circuit yet. The circuit actually reached out to iRacing, and iRacing agreed basically straight away, according to Motorsport New Zealand CEOs. So I would imagine Puka Koyi's last race is scheduled for April next year. I would imagine it'll probably be scanned around then, so that they can get it as close to race weekend scan as possible. So I would imagine maybe end of next year we'll get Puka Koyi. Yeah, that will be another New Zealand / Australian track to add to the list.
Awesome. What's next, host?
Yeah, oh God. Next is...
Go on, you should be organised. You should be segueing.
Well, I'm not used to this. okay, so from looking to the past to looking into a current problem, I don't know, that's terrible. I'm not good at this. Gran Turismo has issued a fix to do with a current problem on the sim, wall riding. Now, I'd love to say this is a sim-only problem, but I've actually seen NASCAR drivers do this and it work.
Why?
But I believe this is... So, current like top esports Gran Turismo players within the last couple of months have been aware of an exploit to do with... there's currently the GT World Series Manufacturers Cup that we talk about every now and again. And one of the tracks that was used is the high-speed ring. And there is a corner in particular which is heavily banked, but tight. And the fix is to just aim it at the wall on the outside, don't break, and just wall ride around, because the damage model isn't good enough to punish them for it. And So the idea is, so that's all, that sounds basic enough. You know, you've got to, you know, you've got to get into the corner. You just don't break. You just wall right around. But also there is an in-game penalty system whereby, you know, wall contact would usually be punished for it. However, if you make contact with another car beforehand, the penalty system will then think it's an accidental move and that you haven't intended to wall ride. It's quite amazing. You know, they say about real racing drivers that they will cheat like hell until they're caught. And I guess to that extent, the same goes into sim racing.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently now, GT have released a statement saying that their esport regulations have been amended to forbid people from doing this stuff. And yeah, that's pretty much the end of it. But you know, it's not an uncommon thing exploiting in sim racing. We saw the other month during the Spa 24 on iRacing the whole grass dipping technique. And whenever something happens like this, there's this debate of, you know, are you doing everything it takes to win or are you just cheating? You know, and I can kind of understand the side from when you get up to the very high levels of esports competition, which these Gran Turismo players were in, and you're in a position where you might be getting paid.
Yeah.
And it's a case of if you don't do it, you're not winning, you're not getting paid. I can sort of understand at that level, and at that level, it basically falls upon the game developer to fix these issues to stop people from doing it. However, if it then spreads any lower to fun events where you're not really gaining anything by finishing first, apart from the accolade of just finishing first, you know, then it gets a bit murkier. But yeah, I guess that's the negative side effect, because we've spoken many times about how amazing it is that sim racing is having the growth that it's having, especially over the last few years. Mm. And with that has come more of an interest in sim racing as an esport championship competition, etc. And I guess with that then comes the level of intensity, which means that people are feel more justified about using these exploits. But I guess when you're at our level, and neither me nor you nor any of us here are fast enough to ever be in that position, we might look at it and think that's just a bit dirty.
Well, yeah.
but when you look at it from their point of view,
it just isn't cricket.
Exactly. It's a level of sportsmanship. But
sportsmanship broke out in this, because there was the article goes on to say that the results for the EMEA region, following a call on socials by multiple top players, every high split racer in the region agreed not to abuse the exploit, showing a degree of sportsmanship that many observers didn't believe would be respected. But it was. So there was a quote-unquote gentleman's agreement that they would all behave and not do it, and thus they did. Like that.
That's quite a rare thing to see, and you know, it's similar to, I mentioned Spa 24, and you had several teams actually pull out of the top split because they would rather not race than be forced to use this exploit to keep up.
Mm.
And you know, and I guess it takes stuff like that for things to happen sometimes, for people to actually just say, well, no, this isn't right. We could do it, but we're not going to, and hope that the problem fixes itself, you know? So yeah, I wasn't actually aware of that side where the EMEA splits agreed not to do it. And that, yeah, more power to them for doing that, actually.
And the thing is, I actually kind of wish that would filter into iRacing in a way.
Yeah.
The grass riding thing was nuts. But it's like you said, you reach a level, as you rightly said, you reach a level where actually not to exploit it is actually to punish yourself. And
yeah,
you see it in, oh God, it's that example again, British touring cars, where where drivers will cut and cut and cut and cut until they start getting penalties, and then they'll pull back. And drivers are thinking, well, I'm not going to do that because I understand the MSA rules and I'm going to adhere by them. Until they realise that they're like right at the back of the field and actually probably need to do it. You know, it's competitive. I find it fascinating, and this is probably a thing we can probably get Don on for, actually, from a psychological point of view, is how competitiveness affects, affects, should we say, the moral standings of a competition.
Yeah.
I suppose. You know, how far can you push rules until they are actually rule, you know, until it is rule breaking, and is it actually, therefore, does it delegitimize the competition if everybody's breaking the rules?
Mm.
It's a bit like Lance, in a way. I don't know if this is a fantastic example to bring up, but it's a bit like Lance Armstrong, wasn't it? Fundamentally, his argument along the whole thing was everybody was doing it, so I had to. I just got caught.
And in fairness, if that is indeed the case, can you blame him? Because otherwise, would he have had the career he had? Had he not done it, you know, it's a hell of an argument, really.
Yeah.
That you can, like, from us mere mortals who were never at that position, you can be like, oh, nah, well, like, all of them, nah. But when you look at it from their point of view, yeah, you can kind of understand that. And yeah, I guess translate.
Or in another motorsport version, remember 2009's double diffusers?
Yeah.
You know, three teams came up with the idea. Was it within the rules? Well, they checked and they said yes. Was it within the spirit of the rules? Probably not.
See, that's the thing, you know, when it comes to racing, and I said this at the beginning about how it's kind of like racing drivers and teams will cheat until they are caught.
Yeah.
Or, as they would say, pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of...
Sounds so much less cheaty when you say it that way.
But I guess, like, it's that double-edged sword of innovation versus pushing the envelope. You know,
I didn't cheat on my AA levels. I pushed the envelope.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Who's to say I couldn't bring in the answers on the lid of a bottle or something? Whatever.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, it's that balance of the competitiveness and wanting to win, and then the going too far. You know, it is a fine line. It really is. Yeah.
But it is a fascinating subject, and I think there genuinely are people that we
can think need. The only solution, and I've said this jokingly, but also, can you imagine, about the Olympics, because, you know, you had the whole... Well, I mean, that would do it, but...
It's a bit final, isn't it?
Yeah. the thing I've joking... Again, I want to stress this is a joke.
Yeah.
But with doping in the Olympics, maybe the solution is to have an Olympic Games where you allow everyone to do it. I think it was Frankie Boyle, the comedian, once said that he wants to see somebody run the 100 metres in 5 seconds with the legs of a horse. You know, how amazing would that be? So maybe you just need to have a support race where you have every exploit available to you. And, you know, you have F1 esports and you have track limits turned off and you see people doing laps of Monza in 58 seconds. You know, maybe it's just a different discipline that needs to happen.
The X-Men Olympics. I've just opened up the next page for the next subject, and I've just seen someone in the top picture that I didn't even realize was still involved with the franchise.
Would that be Dan Grinewald?
Yeah, who we interviewed a long time ago.
Did we?
Well,
that must have been pre me, because I don't.
It was pre you. It was me and Adrian, I think.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know that Dan Grinewald was still. I thought he'd completely moved on, but anyway, we're talking about Forza, everybody.
Forza, hello. Yes.
Do
you remember that game that we used to play a lot?
Do you remember that game that we'd love more information of? Well, we have some news, and the news is
there's no news. The information is you're not getting any information.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. So when asked on the recent Forza Monthly, they were asked about 2023's Forza Motorsport title. And essentially what Dan Grinewald and Chris Isaki said, that the next news that will come regarding the title will be in 2023. So that's a little bit disappointing.
We don't really
know when we're going to be getting, like, we know it's going to be spring 2023, but knowing sim racing titles, that will be the end of spring. But, you know, it's been many years, we've covered this before, it's been many years since Forza Motorsport 7 came out, and many members who are still in the community, and there are people who are still in the community, were left massively frustrated by the complete radio silence from Forza Motorsport and its developers. Even the people involved in the behind-the-scenes beta testing of the game had no communication, which is not great. So to hear now that we're not getting anything still, like for a game that releases in March, we usually get a trailer for it. This is based off of other games. Between a year and 6 months before release. And we've had that, sure. And then within the final, I would say the final 4 to 3 months before launch, you start getting more regular information. So the fact that we're not going to receive anything until at least January is, yeah, it's a little bit annoying for a community that's still basically on the brink of, well, is this going to carry on or is this going to not? Because this, as we said before, the new Forza Motorsport title is the crunch point for the Forza Motorsport franchise. They are either going to lose a lot of people if the game isn't worth the delays it's had, or it's going to revive itself if the game is as good as it could be. So the fact that we're still not getting any actual consistent updates about it, that's not great.
And there's a couple of things as well. If you think about, you and I both have quite a substantial history with the franchise. I built a whole community on the franchise, which is still going strong, and finally receives a lot of support from Turn 10, which is great. Very pleased to hear it. Well done, Ben. And it all, there's a few things. The first thing is more that us, the generation that has grown up with Forza, with the volume of radio silence, that's a weird, that doesn't work, does it? The volume of radio silence, i.e. silence, kind of means that we've moved on.
Yeah. You've seen it. Like, me and you are a great example of this, because there was that significant gap, and that Forza Motorsport 7 wasn't a well-received title in the first place. To then follow that with this delay meant there was a mass exodus of Forza players who decided, well, now's the time for me to move to PC, you know, or to over to PlayStation and Gran Turismo, you know. And so if the new Forza Motorsport isn't good, that's just going to carry on, because now people are seeing, well, my mates have now gone over to PC racing and they're saying it's fantastic. And the console racing market still needs to be a thing. There still needs to be an active, thriving console market, because at the end of the day, whilst I would always say that PC gaming is the best form of gaming, especially when it comes to sim racing, just based on hardware, modern capability, equipment, you know, PC racing outshines console racing every day of the week for me. Console racing is still the entry point, and it's still the end point for a lot of people who can't necessarily make the jump to PCs, be it cost or just practicality's sake, you know. So the console racing games such as Forza, such as Gran Turismo, do need to succeed still.
Yeah.
Because I do think that if they were to ever not happen anymore, there would be a slowing down of the amount of people that are getting into sim racing on PC as well, because that is just the natural entry point. So it is important that they stay around.
I also think that the we sort of touched on this on our last show when we talked about the type of people, because that sounds really snobby, but the caliber of racers that we're now seeing, the folks that came in behind us, if you will, and they've grown up with different games. They've grown up with a less focused experience with Forza, because you think how good Forza 4 was in terms of its motorsport content.
Oh yeah, unbelievable.
And what that allowed communities to achieve, not just Tora, but you know, other communities as well. And then probably from 5 onwards, that seemed to become more diluted as they tried to diversify a lot and ultimately include a lot of the same kind of things that were also going on in Horizon.
Which made no sense.
No, and still doesn't really.
No.
There hasn't been, you can't, as much as they want to, you can't be all things to all men or women. You can't do it. You look at the success of ACC on PC, or, you know, primarily, as a great example. They haven't chosen to be a catch-all sandbox title. That's what Assetto Corsa Normal is for. But ACC is a hugely successful title because it does what it does incredibly well, and it captures the mood of the community at the moment, and the mood is GT racing.
Mm.
You know, it is GT racing in a big way, you know? And I think if Forza doesn't really... I mean, these are conversations that have been going on for a very, very long time. But if they don't, with this iteration, actually finally go, oh, do you know, actually, yeah, you know, these are the sort of categories we need to look at. These are the sort of grids that we need to try and get in to make, you know, in terms of a complete experience. Because that's another thing you can say about Forza. It was very good at getting one or two cars from the category, but not all of them.
Mm.
Or some really new contemporary ones, and the rest really, really old and out of date. And I think they really, really need to focus this time. Is the delay to do with that? We don't know. And I think for a lot of people, the not knowing at this point is going to be enough for them to go, do you know what? I'm not interested now.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. Go on, sorry.
No, as I say, I've finished the thought. I'm not waiting until 23 for a racing experience I know I can get better on PC now.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm already at that point. And I think the thing that didn't help was that the only major look we've had at Forza so far was the one back at, it wasn't E3 because that's not a thing anymore, but it was that Microsoft showcase.
Yeah.
And that was all regarding graphics. And it's like, this again, every time we get any kind of announcement of a Forza Horizon or a Forza Motorsport game, the entire emphasis, or at least 90% of the emphasis on the marketing, is the visuals. And now visuals are important, don't get me wrong, and the Forza games always look stunning. And the Forza Motor, what we've seen of Forza Motorsport, looks unbelievable, undeniably, in my point of view, the best looking racing game that we've ever had.
But there's a big caveat to that.
But if it, you know, it's all style and no substance, you know, to the thing that makes Motorsport 4 so revered, even at this point, even so many years after it released, isn't its looks. I mean, it's aged. Of course it has. All games at that point have aged. But it was the mechanics of the game and the feel of the game and the in-depthness of the upgrades and the tuning and the community features and the car lists and just the things that were possible with that game make it revered and give it the lifespan. The looks of a game really only hit you for the first week, maybe month that you own it. And then you get used to it. And then it stops being the thing that draws you back to the game. The thing that keeps you replaying is the content of the game, not just the look. So I do wish that Microsoft Studios would stop using the emphasis of motorsport titles to just be like, look at what our engines can do. Yes, it's impressive, but it's not what's important, and it's not what built the fan base of Forza. The people that play Forza aren't graphic connoisseurs. They want to be racing connoisseurs, you know? So, you know, they need to, it's Forza Motorsport, not Forza Nvidia. Like, so just to focus on what made the title and the franchise good in the first place. And the graphics are great, but that's second.
Even Forza Babbling Brook, going by how much time they spent looking at that.
I mean, yeah, if you like rivers and brooks, then it's a game for you, 100%. But I don't think that's really the idea. What we really need is we need Turn 10 to start working on like a fishing game. Because they've got that nailed if they ever do that. Maybe bring in the upgrade system so you can get a better rod, but that's a path that we really can't go down because I'm going to start crying.
This conversation is becoming total cart.
Yeah, let's move on to a very brief mention of Forza Horizon whilst we're on the subject of Forza, because the new season is about to begin, today, in fact. And as is usually the case, there are some new cars that are coming to the title. All of these are unlockable through the festival playlist, rather. And they are the so two cars returning from previous Forza titles, the 2018 Nissan Sentra Nismo, yay, and the 1991 Bentley Turbo R. That actually looks quite nice. But then we've got three cars making their Forza franchise debuts. The 2021 Lynx & Co. 03 Plus. Cool. Sure.
This is the touring car.
Not the touring car. No, this is one of the production models still.
Oh,
but it's... Yeah, I'd have preferred it to be the touring car. I've got a soft spot for the Lynx & Co. touring cars. The other one, the 2021 Audi RS7. Cool, I guess. I'm not a particular fan of Audis, but I am a fan of this one, the 2021 Audi RS e-tron.
I know someone who's got one of those.
So do I. They, in my opinion, the e-tron is the best looking electric car there is at the moment.
It's in a specific stunning. Car,
oh yeah, definitely. No,
I saw one in white and it looked horrible.
Oh yeah, no, the classic Audi sort of gray silver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's tasty. So, yeah, all of those are coming over the next few weeks if you're a Horizon player.
Bizarre. In the last 15 minutes, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
it's time for... I'm not going to sing it because, as you can tell, voice. I could do it in a Till Lindemann voice, but I ain't doing that either because Rammstein. It's time for this week's Esports Roundup of the Week, brought to you by The Gaming Athlete. Head over to thegamingathlete.com. To learn more about how to reach athlete status in gaming by maximizing your performance and restoring your well-being. Once again, that's thegamingathlete.com. Friend of the show, Don Armand. It's his birthday on Friday. Happy birthday, Don.
Awesome. September buddies. Woo.
You need to come on the stream more.
Yeah. The problem is he needs to push it back by half an hour and then I could... Yeah, normally I'm at work. So
diversifying, they were on for 2 hours last night, stuffing their face with marshmallows until they nearly choked and hitting each other with what's the thingy challenge they're doing at the minute?
Everyone's the tortilla, the wet tortilla. Yes. Thing.
Yes. So these are frozen tortillas. So you've got really solid snap when the hit you.
That's a much better idea.
This is almost certainly available on demand on his Twitch channel, which I've forgotten the name of. It's not The Gaming Athlete.
It's the Don Jew.
The Don Jew one.
See, I don't even tune in too regularly, and I know that. Cough.
Honestly, I've been put in my place. Right, anyway, eNASCAR, crack on.
Yes, round 15 of the eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series took place at Bristol Motor Speedway on Tuesday night, and this was the first of the four playoff races. Just as a recap, the next three races will decide the four drivers that will fight for the championship in the Phoenix finale. Ryan Luser, despite not being a playoff driver, managed to take his 16th career win in the number 4 Xset Chevrolet after starting down in 14th place. And rather hilariously, so there were 10 drivers in the field who are playoff eligible. Or is it 12? 10 or 12? I can't remember. A number. It's different from the real life one where it's 16. And yet only one of the top 9 drivers was a playoff driver. Really, really odd how that managed to work out that way, but nevertheless. So Ryan Luser would take the victory. Second place would go to Cody Bias in the number 24 for Moeb Motorsports, with Ray Alfala taking third in the 51 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Blake Reynolds would be fourth, with Garrett Lowe, the highest placed playoff contender in the field, in fifth place. So as a result of this, with a playoff driver having not won, there is still no drivers locked into the championship finale. You only lock yourself in by winning. So now with two races left before the championship finale, the third one, there's two places that are going to be dedicated to the championship four for people just based on points, whereas two of them at the moment could lock themselves in. However, the next race is at Talladega, so there is every chance that there is going to be another non-playoff driver winning again. So that would then put even more pressure on people to be consistent in these next couple of races or win the third qualification race to get themselves in. So it's quite exciting. So Talladega will be happening on September 27th. And eNASCAR also announced prior to the race that the championship race at Phoenix, which will be at the end of October, will actually be an in-person event, eNASCAR's first ever in-person event. That will take place at the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, North Carolina. So that'll be cool. And the broadcast team will be there on site instead. So yeah, I'll be interested to see how they do that, and we'll learn more about that in the coming weeks.
Awesome. And in the last, let's check the thing. 10 minutes. We've got to talk about quite a substantial subject, which is the Le Mans Virtual.
Yes, it's back again. And
hey.
I think we were a bit skeptical about the first one, weren't we, when it was just the Le Mans event, but then
but then it wasn't the series itself in the end. The actual racing has been incredibly good and great to watch. It's been the marketing of it that I still take umbrage with, but hey.
Yeah. Yeah, the marketing, and yeah, there have been still some weaknesses. Obviously, it's still held on the R Factor 2 title. Last season was very good, albeit, you know, the Nordschleife round was very sad because of the issues that forced it to eventually be ended halfway through due to network issues. Hopefully this year we don't see a repeat of that. We will see. But yeah, so the 2022 Le Mans Virtual Series will kick off this weekend with the 10 hours of Bahrain? I cannot remember. I'm going off of what it is in real life again. And it's not that.
It's at Bahrain, though.
Yeah, it is at Bahrain. 8 hours. That's it. They changed it, so it's 8 hours now, and that is what it is in real life. So never mind. Yeah, so this week is the 8 hours of Bahrain, and in the lead up to this, they had Le Mans Virtual had a big event announcing all of the teams and drivers. I won't go through all of them because we haven't the time, but some of the highlights that will be competing. So the way this works is that each team has up to four drivers with one or two FIA graded drivers of any level. So platinum to bronze, it can be any. And then the remaining drivers are sim drivers. And they have to have an FIA graded driver do at least one of the events leading up to the Le Mans Virtual in January. So as a highlight of all of the different teams, this is mainly based on the real world drivers. The number one reigning champion Redline car in LMP2 class, that will have Max Verstappen at the wheel. I've heard he's quite a good driver. Might have won a world championship. I've heard he's doing quite well this year as well. It'd be interesting to see how this newcomer comes along. He's partnered alongside Max Benecke, Luke Bennett, and Jeremy Reitfeld. That's a hell of a lineup.
Yeah.
So quite unbelievable. Other highlights on in the LMP class, you got Danny Yunkadea racing for Redline in the number 2 car. Brabham are entering esports with a number 62 LMP with Dries Van Thor as its pro. AMG Team Petronas, you've got Mercedes backing there with a 63. That James Baldwin, Graham Carroll, Bono Huis.
Yeah.
The interesting thing there is, so you've got Baldwin, Bono, you've got Graham Carroll, also someone named Bono racing for Mercedes, isn't it great? They've also got Elias Seppänen there. Amazing drivers, all four of them. You might think, oh, well, they're all sim drivers. Well, yeah, but James Baldwin is now an FIA graded driver, so he's their pro.
I love it.
Quite unbelievable. There's also a second AMG car that's also run in association with Williams. That's got Raffaele Marcello at the wheel. Porsche, they had two factory cars in the GT class for last year's Le Mans Virtual Series. They've now moved up to the LMP class, obviously foreshadowing their arrival to LMDH next year.
Yeah, I wonder why they're doing that.
And their lineups are pretty good. You got Ihanken Guven, Mitchell de Jong, Tommy Ostgaard, Zach Campbell, and the other cars, Josh Rogers, Lauren Heinrich, Mac Backham, and Martin Kronke. Quite unbelievable lineups, to be honest.
I've got a question.
Go on.
Satellite Racing, who we know.
Yes, our friends.
Yeah, has a friend of the show racing for them that isn't a sim racer.
Yes.
David Pittard's racing for them. That's awesome.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's all the worlds colliding, isn't it? David was great when we had him on the show. I almost forgot about that. He was great.
Well, yeah, problem. Yeah. My opening question, maybe not so good, but we'll gloss over that.
Great to see
Bruno Spengler back as well for BMW.
Yep. I mentioned we've got Brabham in. That's not the only old motorsport name. We've got Van Wall are in, as they are in real life. They're partnered with Floyd Burst, Bike Hollers. Yep. So they're in there as well. Sergio Seta Camera and Esteban Guerrieri in there as well. Williams Esports, it's not an event without Williams in it. Augustin Canapino racing for them, along many others. Romain Grosjean's esports team are in there, with Romain actually one of the pro drivers. Rocket SimSport, you'll be glad to know. Alex Buncombe is the pro. Jensen isn't racing, that's sad, but oh well. And that team, actually, the Rocket SimSport team, is basically a sister team to Brabham. They're run by the same parent group, so quite an interesting tie-up there.
For the entry, I'm interested in the entry for Bahrain. I'm really impressed with how many Astons are in there now.
Yeah, see, this is what was quite interesting, because last year the Aston Martin was widely regarded amongst the people competing as the best car, the most stable car, and yet it just wasn't picked as much. Yeah, see, that's the other thing. Last year, the only Corvette we had was a Red Bull factory entry. And now the Red Bull factory entry, well, that's gone the way of the... Why am I forgetting? Porsche. They've moved to Porsche. So all of what I mentioned briefly was all the LMPs. I would say there's more of a bias toward LMP in terms of like the big names, but GT's still big. As you mentioned, no Corvettes, no Porsche factory team, but plenty of customer teams. Redline also won the GT Championship last year, and they've got their returning 71 BMW. Satellite Racing, as we mentioned, in the 64 Vantage. You've got the 99 Oracle Red Bull Racing Porsche with Dennis Lind as the pro alongside Yuri Kasdorp. That's going to be a good entry. Romain Grosjean's esports team are also in the GT class. Alex Smollier as their pro. You've got the factory-supported Ferrari entry with SF Velas. Casper Stoltz, Jordi Spears, Christian Mikkel, and Nicholas Nielsen heading up that one.
Do you know what that lineup in particular is missing?
What's that? Well,
not a lineup, but the SF Velas.
Go on.
Esports team Ferrari, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it surprises me that they haven't named it more in that regard, but you've got the SF, but...
It's missing a certain Brendan Lee.
It is, yes, and we'll talk about... We'll very briefly mention F1 Esports in a moment. You've reminded me. Also, just to finish up, the big highlights, you've got Proton Competition Coanda, VRS. They've got two cars. They're essentially the factory Porsches, because they were like the sister team last year, so now they have to kind of step up into to fill that void. But yeah, that's basically all the highlights. I haven't mentioned many of the sim racing title names of the drivers, apart from, like, you know, the obvious, like James Baldwin's, your Josh Rogers, but
Enzo Benito and Kevin Siggy for BMW team Redline. I mean, it kind of goes, as soon as I saw that, I was like, as soon as I saw Redline, I was like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's quite a good list. What I will say, it's quite sad that amongst all of the drivers that are in Le Mans Virtual and the support category, there's only one female driver, and that's a little bit sad. Yeah. I know that when it comes to the sim racing drivers, you know, there's methods of which you qualify for this series. However, the teams have the option to pick drivers, and it's a bit of a shame that we haven't seen, like, Beska Visser isn't racing this year, which is a bit of a shame because she was quite good last year. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that more of the teams didn't pick women drivers as their pros.
I'm not being funny, but you think how much screen time has been given to the Iron Dames?
Yeah, exactly.
Why is there not an Iron Dames esports team?
I would have loved to have seen that, and then you could have had, you know, you could have had two female pro drivers, two female sim racers.
Yeah,
and there are plenty of female sim racers out there who are knocking it out of the park.
I was going to say, I'm not being funny. Sophia Fleur, she's actually extremely quick in sim racing.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you come to sim racing as well, obviously the only female that we have on the Le Mans virtual list is in Le Mans Cup, and that's Mia Rose, a former Tora alumni. Yeah. And she is bloody rapid. And I don't want to sound surprised by that, because of course women are capable racing drivers and sim racing drivers. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of them out there who are now getting into sim racing, which is, we've mentioned many times on the sport, is a male-dominated field, as is the real world of motorsport. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame that we haven't seen more females picked for this series, but hopefully that's something that changes. I'm aware that we are running out of time, but the entry list has been published for this week, and it's basically different drivers will fill different seats as the series goes on until Le Mans Virtual, when they will all be in. And the Le Mans 8 Hours of Bahrain, Le Mans Virtual 8 Hours of Bahrain, will be this Saturday at starting at 1 o'clock UK time. Qualifying is on Friday. There's GTE qualifying and LMP qualifying separately, and all of these will be streamed online via Traction GG's social media channels. So be sure to check that out, and we will have, as usual, a recap of that race in next week's Esports Roundup. We will also have next week a recap of the opening rounds of the F1 Esports Pro Series. As of the time of recording, we have had one race. As of the time you hear this, we will have had a second race, and then Friday there will be a third race. So rather than split it up, we'll cover all of them at the same time on next week's show.
That, dear listener, is organisation.
Indeed.
Yeah. And speaking of traction, I must also echo Ben's comments from last week. It's a big thank you to them for including us in their must-listen sim racing podcasts. It's quite a thing.
It really is, yeah.
Because one thing he did get slightly wrong is, whilst Toro Radio had been on the air for a very, 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 very long time, received exactly zero accolades. So it's taken us to change our name and change our staff a few times for us to get recognised, which I like. So thank you very much, folks. I'm not going to say goodbye because it's birthday boy's turn.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, that is the end of the show. Thank you everybody for listening, and we hope to join you next week. I don't know whether I'll be there. It's the US week, so it's going to be Ben and Lewis. I might have found my way out of the recording booth. I might not. Who knows? I've been Jordan Groves. I've been here. Matt's been hoarse in the corner. He's made it through. Excellent. I'm going to go take him behind the paddock and shoot him after this. But other than that,
great.
We'll catch you on the next episode. Take care, everybody, and goodbye for now.
Dibbity clock.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.